McGraw Show is on the air, live and local. Get in with McGraw now, 314-969-KTRS. From most cell phones, star KTRS. Or toll free, 1-888-550-KTRS. Now McGraw Millhaven, on the home of the Cardinals and the AM home of the Rams, the Big 550, KTRS.
Hey, good morning this morning. The McGraw Show back on the Big 550 KTRS. This Monday, we need to check in with our good friend Dick Weiss, media critic, longtime editor of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. A few years ago, he has retired. He now has his new website, weisswrite.com. He's also involved in stlbeacon.org, which if you have not been going to that website, shame on you, stlbeacon.org. Some great news stories that are popping up all over that website. Dick, good to talk to you, my friend.
Great to be back.
Scott McClellan, the mouthpiece for President Bush, has written a new book, and everybody's talking about it, called What Happened? Is it right or is it wrong for a press secretary to write a book critical of his boss before his boss is out of office?
Well, I never had any particular qualms about writing a book, the timing of a book.
Right.
I'm going to use a word that I've never said aloud before. Have you ever see, you know, you read these words all day and you see them all the time and you realize you never actually said the word aloud.
I do that quite often.
And then
when I get out, and then when I say it on air, I butcher it.
Right. I probably will. Sycophant.
Yes.
I believe. I looked up the pronunciation,
uh-huh.
Which means an obsequious person who is just always trying to curry favor to his own advantage. And that, I believe, is what Scott McClellan was.
Uh-huh. A sycophant is somebody who plays up to the boss
right.
to always be in their good graces.
Yeah, I think people okay. don't use that word, don't say it aloud very much, because they use brown noser instead.
Uh-huh.
And now he is a turncoat.
Uh-huh. A backside kisser.
Well,
another one.
Yeah.
A yes man.
Yeah. And so he's gone from one to the other, a classic flip-flop. And somewhere in between, he may have made a contribution in terms of giving people some insight into what was going on. So I don't have any problem particularly with the timing,
mm-hmm.
I have a problem with his character and his intelligence.
So you're upset that...
I think he should have realized that when he was in the White House bubble that things were going awry and he should
right.
have spoken up. And then when he got out, he's taking the position now that, I've seen the light. And by the way, as long as I've seen the light, I might as well make a lot of money at it.
Well, now, but now here's the interesting
But there's interesting information in the book.
Here's the interesting thing about it is that he says that President Bush, he still respects President Bush as a good man.
Mm-hmm.
He says, but he is being misled.
Mm-hmm.
He puts his heels into the ground and mm-hmm. refuses to change. He basically lied during the 2000 campaign when he said that he can't remember if he ever took cocaine, and he thought to himself, how can you forget mm-hmm. something like that?
Yeah. Good man, lousy president.
Right. He also says, I'm putting words in his mouth. I don't know if I'm doing that, but there was a scene where President Bush is being interviewed by Tim Russert. And Tim Russert asks the question, since we haven't found weapons of mass destruction, is this a war of choice or a war
right.
of necessity? And Scott McClellan is sitting just yards away from this conversation. President Bush doesn't quite understand the question, and Scott McClellan writes in this book, how does somebody who takes the country to war not have an answer for this question that is basically the question America had been asking itself for months.
Right. He didn't see the difference.
Right.
And what he's suggesting, the president is obtuse.
Right.
At the very least.
Yeah.
And or clueless.
Right.
And that was an interesting moment. That's why, in some ways, the book is a contribution, because it gives you some insight into where Bush's head was at.
Right. But Scott McClellan didn't leave on his own, was forced out.
Right. Well, that's because they had undermined his credibility. They couldn't send him out there anymore because...
Right, right. So it
was... Not entirely his fault.
He never came to grips with his thoughts until he decided, even after he decided to write the book.
Right.
And only after he was writing the book did he realize how wrong President Bush was.
Right. And there is something to be said for the writing process. I don't know what I think until I've written it down.
Mm-hmm.
And so he could have hit... would credit him with perhaps reaching, finding some epiphanies
right
there, but it also happened to be a good material to market
right
and to get out there. And he could have written one of those books that I'm sure Joe Lockhart, the Clinton's press secretary, probably wrote a book that nobody read
right.
because he didn't have anything nasty to say. And George Stephanopoulos did write a book
right
that was critical and everybody read. So
right.
he needed to come to the table with some material.
Yeah, and but I don't know. I really want to read the book. I don't know how I feel about wanting to read the book, if that makes any sense.
Oh, gosh. I wouldn't have too many qualms about reading or buying or,
right.
or anything. I mean, there's so many. I would have trouble with a Karl Rove book, maybe. Because
I
think he was really, if you can apply evil to politics, that was an evildoer. But so, you know, I want to put money in his pocket.
But here you have a press secretary saying that he was partisan and mm-hmm. that he was spinning his side. That's what press secretaries do. Right. How shocking is this that a press secretary writes a book and says I was spinning the truth?
Right. Well, he's expressing rather more remorse than other secretaries,
right.
Press secretaries have. And their other press secretary, he was, frankly, a butt boy for the administration.
Right.
He was just sent out to basically say what they wanted him to say and really not ask too many questions about what he had to say.
But the press
Others
secretary...
Others have been. Jody Powell in the Carter administration was very much a part of that administration, I think part of the policy-making
right.
apparatus. And so what he said had carried a lot more authority.
And wasn't during the Ford administration the press secretary?
Resigned.
Resigned because he was going to pardon Nixon?
Right. He did, on principle.
Yeah.
Imagine.
Right. Now
every 40 years or so happens.
But, you know, it's interesting because the press secretary isn't a member of the press where he is free to give his own opinions. He's there to be the spokesperson and the mouthpiece right. for the president.
Right.
And so there are certain things that you probably don't necessarily agree with that the president wants you to say or the president's thinking, and so you parrot what the president says.
Right. And that's a tricky area because there's some things – there's just a line you shouldn't cross.
Right.
And a lot of people put that line in different places, but – he shouldn't go out and lie to the American people knowingly.
Right. And he says he didn't do that.
Yeah.
He lied, but he didn't know he lied. Or they lied to him, he's saying.
Right.
I don't know. It's interesting. See what happens. Dole's rips.
Oh.
Dole is all
nasty.
Over this guy.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And you know what? Dole brings up a good point, and Scott McClellan brings up a good point. When Richard Clark, the terrorist expert, wrote a book, and Scott McClellan says, why didn't he say that when he was in the administration?
Exactly.
Which,
it was a great clip, and McClellan actually apologized to Richard Clark later,
right.
and Richard Clark accepted the apology, and all is well now. But, you know, what are we getting? What kind of information are we getting from the White House that is so, you know, 1 year, 5 years earlier, it's one thing, and then it's a complete flip 5 years later.
Right.
I mean, you just it erodes people's confidence in the White House.
Whether it's Richard Armitage or whether it's Richard Clark, whether it's Scott McClellan, whether it's Paul O'Neill, the Secretary of the Treasury. It's all right. You actually, believe it or not, watched nine hours?
I watched it all.
You watched the whole thing?
The Democratic Rules Committee and...
Wow.
Oh, fascinating. I mean, I did some multitasking. I did a few things on the computer back and forth, but I thought it was a great show. I want to honor the Democrats for putting on a Golden Globe nomination, an Emmy, something like that.
I mean, it takes the
some
place
great
of,
cast of characters, Harold, the aptly named Harold Ickes.
Yes.
And Howard Dean telling that great story about how he thought the last nominating process was all about him, but Al Gore set him straight. It's really about the American people. And it was terrific. And I thought I watched mostly MSNBC and a little CNN, and I thought that the commentators came in, chimed in at the right times, and sometimes they were off the air because of a lightning storm. And
but don't you find it interesting that they're going to vote these people or count them as half a vote, which conjures up the 3/5 argument?
Yes, yeah, it's all screwed up,
right?
And there wasn't any way to salvage it and make it look nice. I thought if the shoe had been on the other foot and Hillary was in Obama's place and Obama was in Hillary's place, do you think Hillary's people, particularly
Mr.
Ickes, would have been arguing?
Absolutely.
So, you know, this thing, they were in such high dudgeon and so talking about principles and,
right,
and so on, and it was just farcical.
Right, yeah, principle, schminciple. Let me ask you this question, going back to Scott McClellan and the White House and the press secretary. He is critical of the quote-unquote liberal media in this book. That the liberal media did not do enough, and Brokaw said some things, and Brian Williams has said some things, and Katie Couric has said recently that it's probably the most embarrassing episode of American journalism is that they did not ask the right questions, ask enough questions, did not put enough dissenters on, blaming whether themselves, corporate media, corporate sponsorship, and the like. What do you think about all of that?
I think it was true that the media did not ask enough tough questions. In part, I can say that because a few members of the media did. The McClatchy News Bureau was casting doubt on WMD from the beginning. And so, you know, it was there to be had.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're paying attention, and the New York Times totally blew it with the Judith Miller case. They were totally taken in, and they didn't source their material very well. So I think people tend to focus on the White House press corps. Did they ask enough tough questions of Scott McClellan or whoever the press secretary would be at the time? And it isn't just those guys. They're the most visible. I mean, they can only ask so much, and they begin to appear disrespectful if they simply say, well, I don't believe you.
Right.
But it was really the newspapers who do most of the digging, and the networks who have correspondents who could have done more and asked more questions. But I think that there was some. If there was an excuse, there was an atmosphere. But the Bush administration hadn't by then blown its credibility to any great extent, and so. You're going to give the benefit of the doubt to Saddam Hussein, or are you going to give the benefit of the doubt to George Bush? And they gave the benefit of the doubt to George Bush.
How about this? And let me try and explain this correctly. How much of it? And I don't know the answer to this, but how much of it? I know it went on. How much of it was the public demanding that its reporters, talk show hosts, writers, toe the company line, and that the corporations, the media corporations, the general managers, the news directors, put pressure on their reporters and talk show hosts and everybody else to toe the company line because of pressure from the public?
I think that was definitely part of it. I mean, the corporate people, I don't think, care all that much about, you know, whether you're on the right or the left. They want to be good with the public. They want to sell ads.
Right.
And yeah, I think there's some of that. Now, the interesting thing is that I think the reverse is happening now. Things are going fairly well in Iraq, and you don't hear all that much about it. And I think that's going to turn around actually fairly shortly, because there are a lot of metrics that suggest that the surge has done some good, and the deaths are way down, and the bombings, and Al-Qaeda supposedly is on the run. We'll see, but as the election unfolds, that's going to be a real question that Obama is going to have to grapple with, and the media is going to be held to account, saying, how come you're not giving this more attention?
Yeah. What's the best story we've never read?
The best story I've never read is the Washington Post let go 100 people on a buyout, a very generous buyout, and there's a wonderful little piece by Stephen Fear who talks about what it meant to him to be a reporter. And it's headlined, "The Only Job I Ever Wanted." He said, "I was the only paper boy I knew who actually read the newspaper." that he delivered. And so it's a very sweet piece, and I recommend it. You can find the link at weisreit.com. It's from the Washington Post.
Anything new from STL Beacon we should know about?
The Beacon has a very interesting story about people who are going blind through macular degeneration. And all of us will face, many of us will face this as we get older. And now St. Louis is a research hotbed for prevention, and there is a vitamin that you can take. You can buy it at a drugstore that is in part was developed here in St. Louis. A very interesting piece.
And that's at stlbeacon.org.
Written by Joe Seltzer.
There you go.
Special correspondent.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's Dick Weiss, weissreit.com. Dick, great talking to you. Talk to you next Monday.
Okay.